Working Cows Podcast, Episode 64, Bonus Episode.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
Christmas, everybody. It's Clay Connery again with another episode for you guys, brought to you by the Global Ag Network. I am your host of the Working Cows Podcast, and today we are joined by a couple more producers from the South Dakota Grassland Coalition Grassland Planner. We're going to start out talking to Sarah Grimm, and we'll be joined later by her husband Richard, and we are going to talk about their work with the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association. Very interesting organization, doing some interesting work and accomplishing some good things for the land. So really excited to talk to them. Sarah, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Thank you.
You guys were the April featured producers in the South Dakota Grassland Planner, and you also had a recent article about your operation in the Working Ranch magazine called Friendly Fire. And in that article, it's mentioned that the land that used to support 10 cows now supports 3 due to the invasion of cedar. Can you tell me a little bit about the country that you're in and how cedar is playing a role in the availability of forage and some of that?
Sure. What we find, I think if you remember in the last few years, previous to this one, we've had some drought years. We've had some tough years with grassland rates getting so high. People are looking for grass for their cattle. And we started taking a good hard look at our own pastures and how we can improve on them. I worked at the courthouse in Gregory County for several years, and Dave Steffen came to me. He's a retired NRCS guy and retired to the Burke area, but he was seeing signs of the cedar invasion. We call it the cedar glacier because it's just gradually working up the river here. And what we have seen over years, even through Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Nebraska, is that these cedar trees are just gradually working up this area. And those areas do prescribe burn on a regular basis to control invasive species in their pastures. We started looking at that. We did a grid of landowners in Gregory County who were affected by cedar trees and cedar invasion. And we sent letters out to try and form an association and to do prescribed burn. My husband and I also did a couple of really small burns with our CSP program. Just kind of experimental to see kind of how the effect of fire would be on these cedar trees. How could we get effectively burn some of these cedars? We've learned quite a bit since that time, even that the oils and the moisture affect which trees will burn and which trees won't burn. That's been kind of a tough one to figure out. But anyway, we formed our association, I believe, in 16. We had some people that were interested, and Nebraska has helped us a lot to try and form an association. One of the main things, too, was that liability was such a big issue for landowners. You know, nobody wants to start a fire, but we've had 40 years of where we've put every fire out, you know. Fire used to naturally cover this area, and even the Native Americans would burn off the country, and then that little green grass would come back, and then the buffalo would come back, and they could hunt the buffalo. So they understood about burning off that area. So we got started. We formed an association, got some landowner interest, and our association has really taken off, and we've got some attention of a lot of our people, and a lot of different people, agency people throughout the state, NRCS, Game Fish and Parks. A lot of people see a need for getting rid of cedar trees. They've just become a noxious weed.
And that is the Mid-Missouri River Burn Association, correct?
Right. Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association, the first association in South Dakota to do prescribed burns and actually become organized, worry about liability. We have a grant that we're working on to buy equipment, buy more protective gear for our people, and put more fire on the ground is basically what we're looking at. My husband just came in, so I've got him on the phone now too.
Sounds good. Thank you for joining us, Rich. It's good to have you on.
All right. I don't have much to say. I guess she's kind of probably told you all of it by now.
we're just getting started here, and we're talking a little bit about the history of the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association. Can you talk a little bit about the mechanics of the fire and how you guys go about starting it and how you choose where you're going to start it and what kind of the turnaround time is before the benefits are starting to be seen and some of those things?
Well, most of the time you can see the benefits within a month or you know, it once it starts greening up. And as far as burning, where we decide to go, the weather naturally plays a big role in that. If the wind conditions are right, the humidity is right, and we got our igniters, then we basically lay down a wet line and burn into that wet line, you know, maybe a foot or 2 foot into it to begin with, and then back up and go another 5 foot or whatever until we get our desired black line put in. And then we basically go at the other end and set it on fire and see if we get the results we want. As far as the turnaround time, we burned, was it 2 years ago, up north in the river, and we burned off quite a few cedar trees, and we've seen a lot of big blue stem, a lot of the native grass come back in there where there wasn't nothing, because them cedar trees, you know, they don't allow anything to grow under them once they get going. So
it's because they provide so much shade, is that right? There's no sun getting down.
And then their needles that drop form a mat, and they won't let anything grow under those. And I guess one of the things I was going to mention is that we have done a lot of shearing. We've sheared a lot of cedar trees, and then they cut them and stuff them down into those canyons where the big trees are, because it's really hard to ignite the large trees. And then, I don't know, Rich, he wants to go further with that. We didn't think we would be able to burn those large trees, but once you cut them and stuff them and let them sit for a while and they dry down, and if the conditions are right, those ignite like crazy, and we really had a good burn in those areas. And then that was in April. About 3 weeks later, you could see new growth coming, even under those mats. And then we grazed it in August and September, and the cows were going in there. They would go in there because there was new growth coming. And then in October, we did a tour, and that's when the big blue stem was, you know, as tall as we were. It was unbelievable what we got back, you know, and just in the first year.
And, of course, you know, you do have the weeds, too. There's always some weeds in there, but that first year. But most of the time, the native grasses will choke them out. And the big blue stem and the Indian grass and some of the native grasses are pretty hardy, you know. So it makes quite a difference. If you, like Sarah said, that we cut them, sheared them trees and kind of pushed them down into the canyons. And in a deal like that, you about got to follow up with a burn or something, because where there was a lot of cedar trees, it's just like a mat of new seedlings coming up underneath them. If you don't follow up with a burn, then you'll have probably five times more cedar trees than what was there to begin with, because of new seedlings, you know, that they'll take off and sprout. But they're real easy to control with the fire. I mean, you get them all.
Those little ones. What one of the things of our one of the proposals on our grant is that we do deferred grazing to allow fuel to come back and carry the fire through those areas where the small trees are coming up. And we've had really good luck with those types of burns. And the people that aren't doing that are going to have a terrible problem. But when you get those that grass coming and those little cedar trees and you burn that off, you get a really good burn and a cheap way to eliminate a lot of trees.
So I've got a good friend that is a wildland firefighter with the U.S. National Forest Service. And so a lot of what you're saying makes sense to me, because I've seen it at work on our place where we've burned up piles, and he's kind of showed us how to make sure that the fire is contained and some of those things. But maybe not everybody is as clear on what you guys are doing there as I am, just because I have a friend who does this for a living, where he goes out and they'll do a burn line and they'll make sure that there's no way that fire that they're trying to contain can jump past that burn line, which is kind of what you're talking about with that wet line and then the burn down and then going to the other end and starting your fire. So that wet line and the burn line is where the fire is going to stop. And
it is hard to educate people on the fire prescribed burning, but you know, Sarah and I and this Dave Steffen started out on a little deal just east of our place down here. And we kind of got that ball rolling, and then Dave kind of took on, and he started doing the prescriptions, you know, because you got to have a prescription through the ASCS. So he started doing that and started to educate different people, communities, and now it's gotten kind of big because they want to kind of subdivide that, the burn association, in the different areas, you know, because it's got too big for just this local area here.
And where did you guys go to learn about these techniques?
Well, we basically done a lot of reading, and this Dave Steffen, he helped us, and we kind of went from there, and then this, what's that Perry's last name? The Nebraska people were a lot of help, too.
There's a real good organization just across the line in the Niobrara, Lynch, Nebraska area, Spencer, Nebraska. And those guys were a lot of help, and they've put a lot of fire on the ground. They do it every year. They're pretty well trained, and they were a lot of help to us, you know, to just get going. The burn plans, we're starting to write them within the burn association. We find that a lot of people don't want to put their name on the burn plans because of the liability. And ultimately, it is the landowner's liability when you do a prescribed fire. But if you follow your prescription, you follow your humidity levels, your wind speed and wind direction, and you have your crew and you have your plan, it should, you know, we've had a lot of success that way, I guess, is what I'm saying. But it is a scary thought. We've had a lot of landowners talk to us about, boy, I'm just scared to death to put fire in the ground. But the more we have these prescribed fires, the more people are coming to them, learning how to lay in that wet line and the black line and figure out all your prescription. And then it's, you know, hopefully we're becoming more and more safe to put fire on the ground. And like I said, you know, down in Oklahoma, Kansas, all those areas down there, they do it every year just as a management plan, you know.
Can you talk to me about the seasonality? It sounds like the weather is a big part of it. Is there a time of the year that typically has the right kind of weather, or are you able to do this year round?
No, basically early spring, and we was going to try to do a fall burn this fall, but we didn't. We just ran out of time, didn't get it done. But,
well, and this area has been very wet this year, and so there was hardly any dry down of the grasses, and that's what we found with doing a fall burn. But there are people that do winter and fall burns. April seems to really be a good time for us. You know, the grass is you know, not yet green. There's no dry grass. Humidity levels are pretty good about then. That seemed to work. We've done the same weekend in, I think it was 16 and 17, wasn't it, Rich? Yeah. We did the same April day, and we got good burns. Also, when we start in the morning, sometimes the humidity is too high and we have trouble getting started. Sometimes your fires do not take off. As that humidity drops, wow, you can see a big difference in lighting the fire and making it burn hot, you know. So in those areas, we're learning more all the time as we go along.
Sure.
The hard part of this too is, you know, defer your grazing. It's hard to just let it set there and without any help, you know, so you got some fuel to burn. We've been to quite a few burns where the guys used it and they just don't have the fuel to carry the fire. So, I mean, you got to manage it too so you can burn.
Yeah, that was the other one thing that I was wondering about is kind of the... Do you guys burn on just one person's place? Is it kind of a one day a year kind of a deal? Or do you get to do more than one place a year? Or is it, how do you decide where you're going to go?
Well, we put it out there, who wants to burn. And then if they're ready, you know, we'll go, two or three places, Sarah, right?
Yeah, we have. Now there's been, I'm thinking there were about 10 or 12 burns last year. And some of them are small, some of them are grassland, and then some of them are the large, the River Hills burns that are kind of difficult. Those are, we're learning a lot about those. The wind and the fire changes a lot when you drop up and down these river hills and in the canyons. Like I said, we're learning a lot about those. But I think we have 12 to 16 burns scheduled this next coming year also. And sometimes we're not able to do all of them. When we look at wind conditions and you get up in the morning and the wind is out of a certain direction, we can choose which one we're going to go to, because if somebody needs a northwest wind and it's out of the northwest that day and it's, you know, the humidity and the wind is not scheduled to blow, usually we don't go if it's going to blow over 20 miles an hour. But we put on a mass email to everybody to be on alert. We're going to go to a burn, and then we choose a burn based on the weather conditions, and we usually can pick those about 2 to 3 days out.
And can you talk a little bit about pushback? I don't want to necessarily be negative, but have you guys had some pushback or any vocal pushback, or has it been pretty much just like, that's a little concerning, but we're not going to fight you on it necessarily?
You know, when it first started, there was a lot of fear, I guess, because the mentality was, if there's a fire, go put it out, you know. But as it went along, they've seen the good that can come out of this, and they're learning how to, you know, basically fight fire with fire
and safely do it. You know, that's what's also helped is you know, one of the articles from remember the Kansas-Oklahoma fires and how bad those were. There were two guys that saved their place because they had belonged to a prescribed burn association. They knew how to do a backfire. And when that fire was coming at them, they did a backfire and protected their homesteads, you know. And the recommendation those people gave is join a burn association. Learn how to burn, you know, put fire with fire and protect your homes, you know. So I think that's what people, and then, you know, the California fires, the mountain fires, you know, when you've got too much fuel, you know, you're setting up for a kind of a disaster. But if we control this fuel and know how to handle it, even our local fire departments, at first they were like, oh, I don't know, we don't think we want to do this. And then when they came and learned how to do the wet line, how to do a black line, how to burn, you know, burn your fuel out to protect an area, they're like, wow, this is pretty cool. You know, we need to know how to do this stuff. So it's kind of turning around a little bit. More and more people are joining. More and more people see the benefit of this.
What role has the tour? You guys mentioned a tour in October where the blue stem was as tall as you were. What role have those tours played in helping to help people see the benefits?
Well, we did a tour down in our pasture, and the blue stem was we burned out an area, and there was a lot of cedar trees that burned up in there. And the people that came, they seen the big blue stem growing up within them skeleton trees, you know.
I think they couldn't believe it. And they just couldn't believe that we'd burned in April and this was October. We'd had some good moisture in the fall. That's key. Somebody else had mentioned they were worried about erosion. And we have not seen any of that, even that first year we burned, and then we had a 3-inch rain right after that, which, you know, does our heart good because it puts out any embers that could, you know, blow around or that are sitting in a log somewhere. And it really feels good to have a good rain after one of these burns. But there was no erosion where the fire was. We don't see much of that at all. And I think that's pretty standard among the people that have done the burns. We don't see much for erosion.
You know, I don't know exactly what's going on in that case, but I'm guessing that the grass that comes up provides a better protection against the erosion than the trees do, because the trees, as you said, are choking out all that grass growth, and there's just that mat of needles.
Right. We also think the ash maybe has a little bit to, you know, maybe it's holding it in there. We aren't real sure, you know. But, and then there is some ash. We had a real strong wind after one of our burns, and there was ash blowing around, but then after that it rained, and I don't know, those all filled in with blue stem and switchgrass, side oats grandma, you know, some really good grasses that came in.
And you guys are seeing lots of other benefits. I mean, what kind of, I don't know, can you talk a little bit about the bottom line as far as what this is doing for you guys as far as the ability to open up country for grazing and some of that?
Well, yeah, we're able to run probably 10 cows where we could only run 3 before, you know. The cedar took over. I don't know if you're familiar with the Platte Winter Bridge. To the south of that, the cedar just, it kind of looks like the Black Hills. And if you can burn a bunch of that out and get them grasses coming back in, you know, it's a kind of a win-win situation.
I have to speak to the bottom line because I struggle with that. We are not overgrazing those areas that we have burned, so we're not putting a lot of cattle in there yet. We are kind of protecting, and we plan to do follow-up burns in that river country. So I don't know that we've seen any monetary benefit yet, but we know our pastures are so much healthier and doing so much better. And if we get into a dry year again, or a drought year, we have extra grazing that will help us. We've been in a situation where we've come in April and we've lost pasture that we had rented, and we've had to go a long ways away to take our cows. And I feel like we're in a situation now that we don't have to do that. We are saving grass, and we're going to have extra grass for that. We're not going to get into that situation again.
Just a couple of final questions as we move towards wrapping up here. I really appreciate you guys' time today. I wanted to ask you, what has it meant to you to be featured in the South Dakota Grassland Planner?
Well, I think it was quite an honor. I think that's a really good organization. We were very honored to be recognized for what we are doing. Like I said, there's not a lot of monetary benefit to this yet. And it will be someday. I think there will be some monetary benefit someday, but right now we're not seeing a lot of it. You just have to want to take care of your place. And I think the Grassland Coalition recognizes people that are actively working to protect the grasslands for the future. And I think that's pretty important. And I admire the Grasslands Coalition for recognizing people that are doing something out there.
Have they been a resource in this process at all, or have they been able to connect you with other people who are doing similar things, anything like that?
Well, what I have to say is back in 2012, when Dave and I decided to write to all these landowners in Gregory County, they provided the money for the first mailing list. They were like, yeah, we need to do something. Here you go. We're going to help you out with postage. And that was our first monetary benefit, and that was from the Grasslands Coalition. And yes, they have been a very good resource. They've been a lot of help to us. We appreciate them very much.
Any other organizations that have been helpful in this process?
Well, the State Forest Service, you know.
Game Fish and Parks has been, I don't know, they're kind of on the outside edge. We've been trying to work with NRCS a little bit, and there are some people within those organizations that really want to be actively involved. SDSU Extension has been helpful. They've recognized now that we're going to be doing this, and this is something that needs to be done. I think in South Dakota, they're recognizing that the James River Valley and even in that White River area out west, they've seen cedar tree invasions. So more of the agencies are starting to recognize this. But I would have to say, you know, Grasslands Coalition has been, they were the first to recognize that this something needs to be done.
Cool. Yeah, I really appreciate the Grasslands Coalition for their forward-looking nature and the way that they're always willing to try something that maybe is a little bit or a lot outside the box. So,
right. I agree with that. I admire that part of them. Yes.
Anything I missed? Anything you guys wish I would have asked you about or anything else you want to share about the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association?
No, I don't think so. I think the word's kind of getting put out there, you know, and more people are becoming interested, if for no other reason, just to understand it, you know. They might not go burn for quite a while, but they a lot of them do want to understand how it works and the benefits of it.
I think there's a lot of people recognize that we've got a terrible, terrible problem with cedar trees, that eastern red cedar, that it has become a noxious weed. And if we don't do something, we're going to be covered with them. And, you know, there's, as of yet, there's not a spray that'll kill them. And fire is a good tool. But everybody's wanting to be safe, and especially our burn association. And we hope that we're providing something in that burn association to allow people to learn and to see what happens when you put fire in the ground and do some really good things for these grasslands. We've got to protect them.
Okay, I think this is my last question for real. Anything you would recommend somebody who wants to get started, a place for them to go and to research and to read or anything like that?
That's a good question. We can, you know, if they want to get in touch with the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association, we do have a Facebook page, and then, or they can contact Rich or I, and we can put them in touch with somebody. Sean Kelly is on our board of directors, and he works with SDSU Extension out of the regional office in Winter. He is a very good source. He has been very actively involved. Dave Steffen, like I said, is retired NRCS south of Burke. Any of those guys, matter of fact, the guys were at a conference yesterday in Kearney, Nebraska. We're working with the Nebraska group to learn more all the time. You know, the further north you come, the more educated everybody is becoming. It's just kind of coming up from the southern part of the United States. And Nebraska has been very helpful to us. But we are a source and we are a contact for South Dakota Prescribed Burn, and that would be the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association.
Great. I will link to that in the show notes page, workingcows.net/64. There will be a link to the Facebook page for the Mid-Missouri River Prescribed Burn Association. Look, I even spit it out without stumbling. So,
good for you.
So I really appreciate you guys' time today. Very, very informative, very mind-expanding way of thinking, and that's what we're all about here on the Working Cows podcast. Thank you guys so much.
And thank you.
Fascinating stuff there with Richard and Sarah. Very interesting work that they're doing. As I said, if you want to get in touch with them, links to all of the information that they shared, links to their Facebook page and getting in touch with them and learning about how you could get something like this started in your area will be up at workingcows.net/64. Check out workingcows.net/64 for links to what they had to say. Coming up next week on the show, or coming up Monday on the show, hope to get out an episode with Tim Goodnight of Faro Cattle Company about the grass finish steers that they just harvested from cactus feeders down in Texas with a high percentage of Faro Cattle Company genetics and what they were able to accomplish on those steers, turning sunshine into fat. Good stuff. Really looking forward to that interview with Tim Goodnight of Faro Cattle Company. We'll see you then on the Working Cows podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.
We done, Clay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. And Rich, thank you as well. Appreciate you guys taking the time.
Have a good day.
You too.
Sorry about the little guy in the background.
Oh, no, that's all right. I got four at home. That's why I have to come to town to record.
I was shoving apple juice and barbecue chips at him to shut him up.
You did great, Grandma. Good job.
His mother and dad are going to be, oh, my gosh, what'd you feed him?
That's all right. What happens at Grandma's stays at Grandma's.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.